Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Vet Blast podcast. We got the one and only Dr. Lindsay Starkey in the house, wonderful parasitologist. Thanks for being here, my friend. How's it going?
It's going well. Thanks for having me. I'm very excited.
Well, parasites and protection. I can't think of anybody better than to talk about this conversation than with you. We want to thank our friends at Elanco for supporting this fantastic conversation and a relevant one too. My gosh, Lindsay, I just feel like, I don't know how you're keeping up with the research because there's just new and emerging things and diagnostic tools that are just happening, I feel like, day in and day out. You're in a very relevant field.
Yeah, good job, security. But the highlight, Adam, I don't have to keep up on new anesthetic protocols and surgical procedures. And
That's
I'm
true.
in my silo and I'm very happy there.
Love it. Well, a little bit more information about our great friend here, Dr. Starkey. She's an associate professor at Oklahoma State University's College of Veterinary Medicine. She earned her BS in animal science from the University of Arkansas, and she completed both her DVM and her PhD in veterinary biomedical sciences at Oklahoma State University, where her graduate research focused on several vector-borne infections of dogs. She's a diplomat of the American College of Veterinary Microbiology, parasitology subspecialty, completing her residency training through the National Center for Veterinary Parasitology at Oklahoma State University. She's involved in various research projects, including in involving vectors and vector-borne pathogens, diagnostic, parasitology, and parasite consultation and outreach. Dr. Starkey is also heavily involved in the teaching of parasitology to second and fourth year veterinary students and currently serves as co-director for the National Center of Veterinary Parasitology, editor and board member for the American Heartworm Society, and she is now the president-elect of the American Association of Veterinary Parasitologists. Congratulations with that.
Thank you. Lots to do.
You're busy. You know, funny story, I was just thinking about vet school and parasitology. You know, this has a show back in my day, but I remember when I was learning about life cycles, I had a compass and I literally took the compass with a pencil and I did L1, L2, L3, and I just had just constant notes of drawing my parasitic life cycles. And I was known in school, I have really good handwriting is what I was known for. So I made these notes for my fellow classmates. And so I created life cycles in parasitology class. Go
I
figure.
Love that you would have had a pristine circle because you used the right tool.
It had to be perfect, doctor. It really did. Well, so good. I mean, listen, there are, as we just mentioned, so many different parasites that are out there. And when we talk about parasites in companion animals, what are some of the most common myths or misconceptions that you see in practice today?
Yeah, and unfortunately, there are several. I wish this was going to be a short answer. No, I think we're good, Adam. But really, when it comes to parasites, I think a lot of folks, both veterinary professionals, clinic staff, vet students, and pet owners, often think that parasites are a seasonal threat. And that's just not the case. Some parasites are more seasonally active in the warmer months. Others prefer it when it's a little bit cooler. And then some parasites overwinter just fine because the eggs are incredibly refractory in the environment and they're going to survive years in the soil. Other parasites persist by being in an intermediate or peritonic host. That's perfectly fine, happy, healthy, wandering around in the winter months, just waiting to be eaten by that ultimate definitive host. So seasonality, there's some truth to that sometimes, but we cannot hedge our bets and provide parasite protection according to the calendar because the parasites just don't follow the calendar. And there's just too many parasites out there to be considering to think that that would be a good strategy. Another misconception is, well, my pet's indoor only, or only goes out to potty, or stays in the yard, right? That means they're protected. No, sometimes your indoor only animal does go outside, and sometimes the parasites come inside. And I have lots of animals running through my yard in the middle of the night that could be leaving behind their little parasitic friends or feces that could then cause an issue to my dogs, who technically do not leave the yard ever. But the parasites could come into my yard. And so thinking that that animal is safe because of their unique lifestyle doesn't necessarily mean that. Their parasite risk may be less compared to some other lifestyles, but it doesn't take away the risk for parasites. And nor does using a preventive product. So that's kind of the third big myth. Well, my parasite's on such and such, so they're protected against all the things, right? Well, even if you give that right and the pet keeps it in, that doesn't mean they're protected against all the things because we don't have a parasite prevention product that protects against all the parasites that could be at play for any of these pets here. And then there's the other facet of, is the client doing it right? Is that animal getting the appropriate dose at the appropriate time in the appropriate way? All those compliance and adherence issues that kind of build into that too. So still some opportunities for growth when it comes to overcoming some of these common misconceptions.
Yeah, when I talk to clients in the exam room, one other thing I think I always find that this resonated very well. I said parasites don't know zip codes, you know, and and it
Yeah.
re really resonates because they just know, like, yeah, what, because you know, sometimes they'll hear from their friends, oh, I don't put my dog or cat on this because we're fine in this state or whatever. They don't know any zip code. Like, you want to make sure you do the best protection possible for your pets. And to your point, you don't know what's coming into your backyard. You know, all these different types of wildlife that are there. And so I think it's always like a greater conversation knowing, like, listen, you want to be more proactive than reactive when it comes to parasites. So it's a big
Yeah.
thing. From your perspective too, why should veterinary teams be thinking about parasite prevention as a year-round strategy rather than a seasonal one? Because again, we have clients that come in and say, I just want to do it during the summertime, wintertime. But, you know, talk to me about the team. What does that look like?
I think making sure that the team is not falling into one of those myths that we addressed, right? Like they have to know why it's not seasonal too, because I grew up thinking it was seasonal in my own family. And then I learned differently. So we need to make sure that everyone on the team knows that that truly is a misconception when it boils down to it. And then we have to talk about how seasons are shifting. The climate is changing. Vectors are definitely tapping into that and spreading their wings, if you will. But ticks are emerging in different places than they didn't used to be. When you think about mountainous areas, they're potentially seeing more ticks too. The tick variety is going up in some places where they had less tick variety historically. And so we know that seasons shift and that they're unpredictable, and trying to base any sort of program on a calendar, start and end time, is just not going to work out for you in the long run. And we know that sometimes people travel because of the seasonality. Snowbirders intentionally leave what would be the lower parasite risk season for most parasites to go to an area where that risk does not go away because they just took that less parasite-y season away from their lifestyle and went to a warmer, more tropical climate. So the traveling, the movement, all of that. And then just the fact that, as I mentioned, some parasites are inside and kind of house. So fleas are in your home, and those stages are going to be okay all year round, potentially, because your house is relatively climate controlled. Some ticks survive indoors. Mosquitoes come inside. I make a game of trapping them in my house and putting them in my freezer in the winter months so that I could take them to work. So we know these parasites come inside, and some are housed in an animal, so they're perfectly content living in the tissues or whatever of that host, just waiting for that nice life cycle that Adam used to draw back in vet school to come to
Yes.
fruition.
Yeah, it's full circle. See what I did
Full
there?
circle. Yeah.
You know, I had a client years ago. This is before some of the products were out, but he came in on an emergency and he had a paper towel in his hand and he was showing us proglottids. It was literally emergency and he was very upset and he came berating the hospital because he said, I thought my dog was covered against this. And it really begs the conversation about tapeworm, for instance, because I mean, obviously it is hard for a pet owner to see that. And I don't think tapeworms, and cut to where we are now, fortunately, we now have some good protection against that. But tapeworms often don't get the same attention as other intestinal parasites. And what makes them unique and why should they still be on top of mind for veterinary professionals?
Well, I think they're harder for veterinary professionals to see and diagnose, especially historically. So you diagnosed it because the owner freaked out and brought them to you, which is great, right? Because then you had something to work with besides just that owner's story about what they were experiencing. But they're often misconstrued as non-pathogenic when they're in the gastrointestinal tract of the dog or the cat. We often think they're not causing a lot of issues, and I think in a lot of dogs and cats, they probably aren't, but they can cause a linear foreign body. I've seen a case or two of that in a cat. They can cause potentially hemorrhagic diarrhea, which may seem to be a thing when we think about echinococcus infections. And then there's that aesthetic issue that your client was suffering from. The dog was probably not suffering from the tapeworms, but the client absolutely was. And yeah, you get a tack a nice emergency fee on that easy peasy
Yes.
diagnosis there. But when we think that they're non-pathogenic, sometimes we kind of let it slide in our just appointment where we have to cover all the things, right? I'm going to cover what's really important, what's really manageable, some things we can do about, and maybe these other things that we think are relatively rare are not causing a lot of harm. We'll just let that slide because my appointment's 15 minutes and I gotta go. We can't let tapeworms slide like that anymore. We're getting better data about how prevalent they really are because we do have better tools now to find them. And we're getting data on some more scary tapeworms being more present than we used to think as well. And so some tapeworms are zoonotic and some of them grow like a cancer when they get into a human being. And that's not good at all. So we need to make sure we're doing our role in protecting the pets, diagnosing them appropriately, managing them appropriately, lessening their risk, or treating it when they have a problem. And all of that goes on to then help make sure that environment that that family is sharing with that pet be a safer environment.
Yeah. And what about some of these emerging ones that we're seeing now too? So, we have the tapeworms that can intersect with broader parasite risks, including vectors and the environment and the emerging threats of New World screwworms. I feel like I'm seeing that in my news feed every day about something with the screwworms.
Yeah, so when we think about tapeworms, it's probably kind of hard to make that leap of let's
Yeah.
talk about vectors and other parasites. But when a pet has a tapeworm, we know they have a tapeworm and we'll deal with that. But we have to figure out which tapeworm it is. Did it come from ingesting a flea? Did it come from ingesting a vertebrate? And then we have to manage those two things separately, make sure that pet's on a comprehensive vector control program if it's the flea associated tapeworm, because when there's fleas, there's probably ticks and mosquitoes and other vector threats going on too. And if they have one of those that's acquired by eating a vertebrate, okay, that's not a great lifestyle to have when you want to remain parasite free, because these vertebrate hosts, so we talk about reptiles and amphibians for a lot of like southern type Gulf coastal, Atlantic coastal things, but rodents, rabbits, even some of our larger vertebrate wildlife can be intermediate or peritonic hosts for some of these things. If that animal's hunting or scavenging, they're not only opening themselves up to getting a tapeworm, but they could get hookworms. They could get lungworms. They could get hepatozoan, which is a weird tick-borne disease transmitted through peritonic hosts. They can get a whole bunch of other things, and some of which can be very difficult to try to diagnose and are weird enough that they're not routinely controlled with some of our parasite protection products. And so tapeworms are this little window into all these other things that we now probably need to be exploring to make sure we're providing comprehensive protection for that pet's health, but also comprehensive public health conversations too, because
Yeah.
several of our tapeworms can impact the family if they get exposed to the wrong stage.
Yeah, I think that talking about zoonotic risks, some do, some don't really understand it, but I think keeping that top of mind and having those conversations about zoonotic diseases, especially some of our dogs are working, they're either service animals or, they're helping us out. So it's so important to bring that top of mind in terms of even if it's through social media campaigns, on their website, email blast. I think it's important to have that conversation, right?
Yeah, maybe I'm more attuned to it now. I've got two little boys who put
Oh,
everything in
yeah.
their mouths. They're 5 and 1, and so I'm not gonna win that battle. But the
Right.
battle that I have a chance at is keeping my dogs parasite
There
free
it is.
since they
Yep.
all share the same backyard.
Right. Absolutely. So, for busy practitioners that, we were talking about earlier, you got either 20, 30 minutes that you're in there talking about these preventative care conversations. What are some practical ways the entire veterinary team, doctors, technicians, support staff, can reinforce consistent parasite messaging?
Well, it really does need to be a team effort. But for it to be a good team effort, the team needs to know the ins and outs of what we have available on our shelves, what the veterinarians are ultimately recommending, And so making sure that you've got that training in place to make sure everyone is on the same page, I think that helps with that comprehensive messaging across the board. That way, if they had a different technician last time or saw a different doctor last time, we're not getting mixed messaging. Or you recommend something in the exam room, walk out, client goes up front, and receptionist is like not buying into the
Right.
same messaging that you just gave 3 minutes prior in a different room that they didn't necessarily hear. They need to know what's coming out of everyone's mouths at every point in that visit so that it can continue to be reinforced. So making sure that the team has the appropriate training and making it easier to do that by limiting the things that they have to know. Because there's a lot that y'all have to know out in general practice beyond parasites. So I don't need to know what 20 different products do. I shouldn't be stocking 20 different parasite prevention products on my shelf. That's just insane. One could do that, but that is going to cause a lot of issues in making selections and people remembering what things do. Streamline that to make it easier for your team as well. And then just making sure that, we're taking those opportunities to use local data, current data to talk about parasite risks, that we don't assume that that pet owner that has said no year after year after year to parasite testing or parasite prevention, that they'll continue to do that. We have to keep telling them, this is an issue. We believe in this issue. We need to protect your animal and your family. And don't assume that clients know how parasites get around. They may think that it comes from, the dog park exclusively, and a lot of parasites do, but some are transmitted by mosquitoes and fleas and ticks and other things, and they can be in your yard and not just areas where other dogs are hanging out. And so making sure that we really have that baseline education amongst the staff that parasite risks are a lot broader than a lot of people make an assumption for. And then reminding clients when, especially we've got our technicians or that first line person in the exam room starting to take a history. We need to dive into a lot of those questions about travel and lifestyle. And have you ever seen your animal eat something they shouldn't? Those sorts of things, because that can really help us know are parasites maybe more of a risk here or not. So lots of opportunities for every single facet of that veterinary team to have some level of parasite-based conversation amongst the other
Yep.
conversations that
So
have to
many.
be had as well.
There is an acronym that certain hospitals use, and you're going to love it. This is to get aligned with everyone from the receptionist to the technicians, and it's called PETS, PETS, and it stands for Parasite Protection Eating. In other words, what are they eating, feeding wise? T for testing, so make sure to talk about like heartworm and fecal testing, and then S are for services, so like nail trims, anal glands, ear cleanings, and those kinds of things if there's anything that we can do. And I like that because it's very quick, little things that they should just be on top of mind, so that way if it gets missed along the way, because things can happen along the journey of the patient through the hospital, they want to make sure that they hit those touch points throughout. So I thought that was pretty cool that they have like a little acronym, right?
Yeah, that's nice. I hadn't heard that before. I'm gonna have to use
Yeah.
that.
Yeah, I take you're welcome.
Then
Yeah,
do I credit you?
no, you got it, all yours.
This is Adam's
Yeah,
acronym.
right. But as we're wrapping up too, as we look ahead, what are some trends or emerging parasite concerns that veterinary professionals should be paying close attention to, and how can we stay informed to help protect both pets and public health? Because that's what we do.
Yeah. Well, the good news is, we've got some great tools in our toolbox when it comes to parasites now. So we've got enhanced ability to diagnose things that we didn't have historically that make it easier to tell certain things apart or to see a broader spectrum of things than perhaps what we were used to detecting if we were performing parasite diagnostics in-house, things along those lines. So better tools to get a better idea of what really is going on out there and what those risks are. And we've got great products that can do a lot of things. We can get heartworm and flea and tick control and intestinal parasite coverage all in the same things now. We can get really broad spectrum intestinal parasite coverage and heartworm in some other products right now, too, because not every product is equal. And unfortunately, we can't just have one thing that we can rely on to do everything. So maybe we get there. I think that's a goal of a lot of folks is to get that most comprehensive option possible. But we're not quite there yet. But other things that we need to be kind of keeping an eye on and making sure we're staying current on are transboundary diseases. And so you brought up screwworm earlier. There's other things, filtering in from other parts of the world that we're not necessarily used to seeing or looking for, but are actually making appearances domestically. So we've got to keep an eye out and just always have that curiosity. When something doesn't read the book or respond the way we thought it would respond, dig a little deeper. Especially if there's a parasite diagnosed, there's likely more parasites at play for
Yes.
that pet. And then just not trusting that our treatment program is like a one and done and we can just wipe our hands of it and be good. We have resistance issues now that we are facing. And sometimes it's a mismanagement. It's not actually really resistant. And you have to go through this level of steps and making sure that we're truly determining, is this parasite not responding to drug or drugs versus we did a diagnostic at the wrong time. We didn't understand the parasite's life cycle and biology, or maybe we misidentified it, something like that. But we do still, at the end of the day, when you go through all those steps, still have cases where the parasite's not dying when it should from a drug that used to work. And that's in the heartworm realm, that's in the hookworm realm, Giardia and tapeworm too. I get emails on refractory cases there as well. And so just knowing that we can't just rely on us giving our treatment and never looking again and just assuming that it worked. And I think a lot of us did that. And my pets went through that when they used to go to the vet when I was younger. They would get dewormed, whether or not their fecal was positive, and then see you next year. And maybe I was on a preventive that monthly did something for them. But sometimes those drugs don't work the way they used to. The parasites have learned to survive. It's Jurassic Park out there. So they're finding a way. But there's lots of things that, even with the great tools and products we have right now, are still going to plague us. And I hope those problems don't get worse moving forward. But it's kind of hard to say right now. We're kind of in this weird little gray area trying to figure out and get a handle on what's really going on out there. And with the tools we have, trying to manage these as best as we can. Will we get better tools? I sure hope so. Will these problems start to subside? I also hope so, but hard to predict that right now.
It really is, really is. Well, great conversation, my friend. Dr. Lindsay Starkey, thank you so much for being on the podcast and sharing your expertise, and keep on shining. You're doing great work, my friend.
Thank you. This was so much fun. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure, and thank you again to our friends at Elanco for sponsoring this great conversation. Don't forget to rate the podcast as we continue to grow, and we'll see you next time right here on the Vet Blast Podcast. Take care, everyone. Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast Podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay possum.